Welcome to Season 10 of American Political History, the North American Contest, the Cherokee War. In colonial America, it was called the French and Indian Wars. And now it is time that we emphasize the and the plural. Although the French threat had been defeated, we still need to cover the Indian Wars, and the first one of those to cover is the Cherokee War. The Cherokee Nation was the largest Native nation in contact with colonial America. They had been trading partners with Virginia for generations, and on and off trading partners with South Carolina. The Cherokee Nation had a population somewhere around 10,000 living in three groupings of villages. One grouping is in what is now the eastern border of Tennessee. The other grouping was on the Great Smoky Mountains, and the last grouping was in the valley of the Tennessee River. The Cherokee economy was centered around animal skins, the selling of native slaves, and the collecting of bounties for returning colonial escaped slaves. They also injected wealth from their economy with war plunder. 700 Cherokee warriors had joined John Forbes on his attack of Fort Duquesne. When their warriors traveled home the hundreds of miles, they had taken with them the muskets and ammunition that they had been issued by the expeditions. In one episode, a Pennsylvania militia patrol hunted down three Cherokee warriors and accused them of stealing colonial muskets and opened fire on them. The militia said the Cherokee attacked them. The Cherokee said the warriors had no reason to. Additionally, when the Cherokee sent most of their warriors to fight with Forbes' expedition on Fort Duquesne, a South Carolina woodsman took advantage of their absence by venturing into Cherokee territory and hunting there. Hunting on another nation's hunting grounds was a great cultural insult. When the Cherokee sachem, Little Carpenter, attempted to negotiate concessions from South Carolina for such egregious actions, Governor Lyttelton was willing to concede some economic concessions, what in his mind was an equivalently fair trade for the game that had been poached, but he was unwilling to produce gifts to the level the Cherokee demanded for the cultural insult. Governor Lyttelton viewed their situation in simple economic terms. If his citizenry had killed one of their cattle, he would, of course, replace it with an equivalent cattle, but he was not willing to pay five cattle, even if you said you were gravely insulted. The relationship continued to deteriorate when the Cherokee attacked a South Carolina settlement, killing 30. The governor of South Carolina embargoed all gunpowder shipments to the Cherokee until they surrendered the murderers to colonial authorities. When the Cherokee sent a delegation to negotiate, South Carolina's governor took the delegation as hostages, saying that they would be prisoners until the Cherokee surrendered the murderers. With little thought to the internal Cherokee politics, the South Carolina governor had just taken hostage all of the Cherokee sachems most favorable to negotiating terms of peace in this dispute. On January 19, 1760, a party of Cherokee warriors began to siege Fort Prince George, where the Cherokee hostages were being held. The captain of the garrison at Fort Prince George responded by killing the hostages. That spring, the Cherokee would strike all along their southern frontier. By the end of May, they had killed over 1,000 settlers, rolling back South Carolina's frontier just 75 miles west of Charleston. South Carolina was equipped with untrained militia, who had no intention of leaving the region of their families. Governor Lyttelton appealed to General Amherst for aid. What he received from Whitehall was reassignment to Jamaica. The Creek Nation had been encouraging the Cherokee to go to war with colonial America, even insinuating in negotiations that they were to join them. But when war broke out, they were perfectly fine watching their generational rivals weaken themselves against colonial America. And once the war was started, the Creeks simply waited on the sidelines for an opportune moment to join whichever side was most advantageous to their own interests. Perhaps they would join the English for lavish gifts, or maybe play mediators of war for political clout in the region. When the Cherokee sent emissaries to Fort Toulouse in Louisiana, the French told them that they wished them the best against the English, but they could not sell them any gunpowder, for they had none to spare. The Native nations in the Ohio Valley had recently signed the Treaty of Easton and were unwilling to come to the aid of the Cherokee Nation. The Cherokee sachems now hesitated. With no prospect of allies, they were now in a very dangerous position. In April, Colonel Archibald Montgomery would arrive with 1,300 redcoats. By May, with aid from Catawba scouts, they had arrived at Fort 96 and then descended into the Ohio Valley, where they captured 100 warriors and burned 5 Cherokee villages. Colonel Montgomery then sent messages for parley with the Cherokee. When they refused his discussions, he said, "We will have to dig them from their mountain." In June, as his forces attempted to travel up the Smoky Mountains, they were repeatedly ambushed by Cherokee warriors. Sustaining hundreds of casualties, Colonel Montgomery deemed the route impossible. Returning to South Carolina, he dropped off his wounded and personally sailed to New York to report to General Amherst that he had inflicted the greatest damage upon the Cherokee. To the South Carolinians, it looked like Colonel Montgomery got busted up by the Cherokee and found an excuse to sail away from the situation. In July, the Cherokees set a siege on Fort Loudoun. Within a couple of weeks, the garrison's rations were cut by 2/3. A week after that, they were eating their horses. A week after that, they were eating the kernels of corn that they could find within their mills. The men that had Cherokee wives deserted the garrison at night, figuring captivity with the Cherokee was better than starvation. By August 5th, the garrison had mutinied against Captain DeMere, telling him that they planned to depart en masse if he did not surrender the fort to the Cherokee in return for their safe passage home. On August 9th, Captain DeMere surrendered the fort to the Cherokee on terms that they have safe passage home. The next morning, while marching, they would be attacked by the Cherokee. Only those that had Cherokee family, or were specifically pardoned by Cherokee friends, were spared from the massacre. Captain DeMere himself was scalped alive and forced to dance until he bled to death. The other men were beaten to death, and any women and children were taken as slaves. The next 6 months of the war was a relative standstill, until January 1761, when Lieutenant Colonel James Grant would take command of a new force, with orders to chastise the Cherokee and reduce them to the absolute necessity of suing for peace. Lieutenant Colonel Grant was well seasoned to fighting in North America. He had served as Montgomery's second-in-command the prior year, and he has served as a field commander under Forbes during the expedition against Fort Duquesne. Poor weather would prevent his expedition of 2,800 experienced redcoats from marching out until May. On June 10th, near Echo, the Cherokee would meet the invading army on the battlefield with a force of 1,000 warriors. The Cherokee would target the pack animals, attempting to damage the ability of the expedition to travel. After a day of fighting, they killed 60 of the 200 horses in the expedition, but had expended most of their ammunition. Without ammunition, or the ability to trade for it, the Cherokee warriors could do nothing but watch as the English expedition burned all 15 villages in the Tennessee Valley, and laid waste to around 1,500 acres of corn and bean fields. And for any unlucky Cherokee men, women, or children who were caught by the English that summer, they were immediately executed. Instead of fighting in the backcountry, Lieutenant Colonel Grant had taken the strategy of simply making 4,000 Cherokee homeless with no crops to survive the incoming winter. And the real damage was yet to come, because the Cherokee were now weakened in the eyes of their native peers. The Creek, Chickasaw, Catawba, and Iroquois now started raiding the frontiers of Cherokee territory, looking for their own plunder from this war. Even Virginia sent an expedition commanded by William Byrd to extend the colonies 80 miles west, permanently, capturing once Cherokee territory into Virginia. In August of 1761, the Cherokee would sue for peace with England. The Cherokee would once again send Sachem Little Carpenter to negotiate. All prisoners, slaves, and captured livestock were to be returned to the colonists. Cherokee territory would be moved within 40 miles of Kennawee River. This was a forfeiture of about half the lower town's hunting grounds. Lieutenant Colonel Grant demanded that the Cherokee choose a Sachem amongst their ranks to be executed for the symbolic punishment of the Cherokee's crimes. This would be removed from the final peace terms. Thank you for listening to this episode of American Political History. If you want to support the show, please subscribe and leave a 5-star rating, and share the show with someone you think would enjoy listening. Thank you again, and until next time.